The impact of this week's Supreme Court decision upholding the Trump administration's Muslim travel ban is only beginning to be understood. It has far-reaching implications for immigration law and for the future exercise of presidential power. Hawaii immigration lawyer John Egan sees the decision as one that opens the door to racism in national jurisprudence. We spoke earlier this morning.
Well, I think the impact is not really going to be known for a while. It's not good. Essentially, what the court has done is repeated the mistake they made in Korematsu. It's interesting that they stated that they were overruling Korematsu in the process, but essentially they allowed the government to throw sheep's clothing over a wolf.
Korematsu being the decision in the Roosevelt era that validated Japanese internment during the Second World War.
That's right. They quoted from that decision's dissent in the decision that they put out yesterday. Essentially, what they quoted Justice Jackson saying that this has no place under our Constitution, and we should not be validating temporary executive orders and embedding it into the jurisprudence of the United States Supreme Court.
But that's exactly what they did.
Exactly what they did. Exactly.
So the way I read that language disavowing the World War II era decision was that they felt the need to clearly separate themselves from people being able to say, oh, this is just like the internment decision made during the Second World War.
Well, they made an interesting distinction. Lawyers do that. That's what we do for a living. Mm-hmm. They pointed out that the people who were subject to this travel ban are not inside the United States, and they're not citizens or permanent residents. And the people who were subject to internment were, in fact, U.S. citizens. And that was the distinction that they made, that you have a separate set of rights for citizens and a different whole battery of analysis goes into how you decide who can come into the country. I'm not sure I'm buying that. Fundamentally, discrimination can happen anywhere at any time, and our government is not supposed to be participating in it.
Is there precedent for that kind of separation of categories of people and how government treats them?
Well,
in court decisions?
Well, yes. In fact, it's throughout immigration law. There are distinctions based on what type of status you hold. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely part of immigration and part of how they frame this decision. The law that they're citing to is the rule on inadmissibility. Inadmissibility means who will we admit into the United States and under what circumstances can we change the rules? That's the particular part that they pointed to. The president is given very broad authority to change that rule when there's a national security issue.
What does that bode for the future?
Well, I think this decision actually is going to be read and reread for years. There's a lot in there to unpack. In the immediate term, I think that this validates Trump's program, that he is attempting to cut down on immigration overall, not just the illegals, not just the terrorists. And he has made a claim, you know, basically a campaign claim that he was going to stop Muslims from coming to America. And he has now got the Supreme Court basically validating that.
I can't think of any past decision you would know far better than I that specifically named a religious group as a target.
Well, not in terms of the immigration law. Mm-hmm. That has mostly been due with ethnicity. We have had immigration law that has excluded Asians. We have immigration law that has excluded Eastern Europeans and Southern Europeans. Never really on racial or religious grounds. So this is bad that we're now accepting that.
The immigration laws excluding that you refer to, how far back do they go? That's a way back, isn't it?
Well, not so very long. I was on vacation in California last week and visited Angel Island with my daughters. Their grandfather came through there, and that the reason he was at Angel Island was because of the Chinese Exclusion Act. So this is all within living memory. This is not something that we get to say, oh, that happened way back when, we're no longer like that. This decision says, yes, actually, we are still like that.
Just in the couple hours before you came in, one of the more moderate justices announced his retirement. What do you see for that? What does that bode for instance, the future of immigration law in America?
I don't see anything good coming out of this. As a lawyer, I was horrified to watch Mitch McConnell, the head of the Senate, delay and ultimately defeat Barack Obama's constitutional right to name a Supreme Court justice while he was sitting as president. So he managed to keep that seat for the next, hopefully, Republican president, and they now have a majority on the court. One more justice, they're going to pick somebody young. They're going to pick somebody who is way out in their direction. And
that'll be the court for the next 30 years.
Yeah, we're going to be long gone before that court comes back.
Roosevelt back in the day was accused of packing the court, and at one time or another, every president comes under some scrutiny for making the court into what he wants. But there has never before been the blocking of a nominee, such as happened in this past transition from one administration to another.
And that's really not a good precedent. When you start to look into the future, where is this going to go? How do we get back to having some kind of bipartisan sense that justice is not Democratic or Republican, that justice is supposed to serve everybody? It's very troubling. It's also very troubling that somebody who has absolutely no respect for law and precedent is going to make this choice, who he wants to be on the court. This whole sequence of events with the travel ban, you know, the first travel ban was so poorly written, so ignorant of the law, so ignorant of proper phrasing even.
It was easy to knock down.
It was just a terrible piece of writing.
Yeah.
The second one was only a little bit better. Shows these people have no sense of jurisprudence whatsoever, and yet the guy who is pushing that is now going to tank the court.
Well, I mean, the opposition, or you know, these people, as you refer to them, got it on the third try.
Well, yes, they did. They had to bring in real lawyers who have real experience in real courts, and they were able to trim the executive order down to where it could pass under the sheep's cloth before the court.
Is this a major, you know, when you said before the president has the power to do what he wants, we're getting away from the president proposes and Congress disposes. I mean, there's still checks and balances. Do you see that eroding?
I do, and I think it's a longer term trend. You know, honestly, and I think we've spoken about this on air before, I was not a keen fan of some of the executive orders that Barack Obama put through, mm-hmm. not because I didn't like the result, but because I didn't like the process, that he was taking power to make law that really should be done in Congress. Now, we have a dysfunctional Congress,
yeah.
but the solution to a dysfunctional Congress isn't reshifting the balance of power. It's putting some fire under those people in Congress. You know, we have to vote some of these people out, and we have to put in responsible people in power. I mean, that's ultimately the problem with this whole decision. The problem isn't that the decision itself is so reprehensible. It's actually kind of neutral. The language is subdued. The problem is that this order, standing through the decision of the Supreme Court, has allowed somebody who is really just using this as a way of validating his campaign promise to kick the Muslims out, that's not how we're supposed to be using our system.
John Egan is an immigration lawyer practicing here in Honolulu. This fall, he will be teaching refugee and immigration clinical law at the University of Hawaii Law School.